Welcome, welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast. I am your host, Sean Bogle. In addition to making some appearances on the EOC podcast show, we are twisting things up on the podcast show by introducing a variety of individuals to host their own show in their own unique way. Here at Wildlands, we strongly believe that collaboration is key to conservation efforts, and I'm extremely excited to announce that we have added a fresh component to the EOC marquee that embraces all art forms and how these diverse creative mediums can convey conservation information. All of us respond differently to a variety of media. Some of us connect with video and radio, while others may connect to painting, song, or dance. It is important that these issues, actions, and efforts that concern the natural world of our planet are received by as many people as possible. So we introduced the Eyes on Conservation Art Scene. The Eyes on Conservation Art Scene, also known as EOCAS, E-O-C-A-S, in its abbreviated form, is a community where artists can fuse together, share ideas, and showcase their individual works that focus on conservation. The mission of the EOC Art Scene is a place of unity and raising awareness about wildlife issues, not to mention a place where cool art is created. Recently, we launched the first EOC Art Scene exhibit at the LaBois Film Festival, which we co-host with the Treasure Valley Land Trust in Boise, Idaho. Our first amazing collaborators to premiere this exhibit is the Swell Artist Collective and the Endangered Species Print Project. The exhibit is currently on display at the Swell Artist Collective Gallery, which we attended, and this takes us into today's show. The theme of the exhibit is sensitive species, which I know sounds rather ambiguous. We wanted to eliminate the various conservation status terminology that is used by state, federal, and international organizations like IUCN. We believe that all species should be identified as sensitive despite their population status and not only given attention when their populations are in dire straits. The goal of the exhibit is to raise awareness of species in the Idaho and Pacific Northwest region, as well as international species, and how these species share commonalities as well as connections to all species. Swell Artists produced 35 original works of art of these species, and the Endangered Species Print Project presented 5 art pieces coupled with a map showing their migrations. These two organizations are wonderful examples of an artistic community with a shared love and appreciation for wildlife while inspiring others. During the exhibit, I had the chance to talk with some of the artists, scientists, and contributors. Now let's transcend into the wild world of the Eyes on Conservation Art Scene.
My name is Kelly Knopp, one of the founders of the Swell Artists Collective. So this show that we're doing right now is actually kind of, it's something we've done before with other like history entities or like local things. So it fit really well to not only have artists produce work that is tied to something in our community, but also educate the viewers. We found that having that bit of information with the artwork really helps the viewers kind of attach themselves to it and enjoy it more. So when we were approached by your crew and started talking about this art idea, it was like, man, we have a stable of amazing artists, and it'd be right up their alley. And put out the call, gave them an animal list, and everyone drew out of a hat, random, and everyone was really excited to do it. And now we're standing here, and the room's filling up pretty quickly, and seemed to be a great fit for everyone involved.
So I'm curious, is this the first, the first opportunity for Swell to be a part of a strong conservation concept like this, where there's, it's not just traditional wildlife species that we're training here. This isn't your typical trout or bear on a pedestal kind of thing. There's definitely a lot of self-expression from each individual artist. Tell me a little bit about the reaction or the response you got from the community themselves, since you oversee them, and like, how did they perceive that?
Well, it was funny. It was kind of for people that live here in Boise, the artists and the people that have heard about the show and ask questions, you know, they would look at the poster and realize that are these really endangered or sensitive species, and they were unaware. I mean, you think about like a bear or certain birds or fish, and you're like, oh, there's so many of those, and you never hear that they're endangered or sensitive. So I've talked to a bunch of artists that were just completely unaware that the animal that they were portraying in their art is at risk. And same with, like I said, the people coming here, they're going to be very surprised to learn that there are so many animals on that list, and ones that you would just feel like are probably fine because you don't hear that they're on that list. So the coolest thing about this to me is educating the artists and the community, and just putting that in their head with an image so they can walk away being like, wow, I had no clue that there were so many species in our own state that were in need of conservation. So yes, it is the first wildlife conservation thing we've done. We've done some Idaho history shows. We're doing a show with Idaho Preservation, which is more about buildings in the future. But we find that that's enough reason to get someone off their couch to see art.
Right. Well, that's great. I extend my hand to you. Thank you for really being a part of this. Yeah. I really appreciate everything that you guys have done. Thanks very much.
Our first artist that we spoke with is Robert S. Hera, who is an award-winning tattoo artist and self-taught painter.
All right. So if you could just describe the piece that you created and when you were creating that, what was that thinking process? I mean, have you ever had any connection with wildlife on any level in general?
I do hunt, I do fish, but I like conserving, you know, wildlife, leaving it better than what we go out.
I'm not judging you. We're just having a conversation.
When we go out, I go hunting, and you know, you see trash, you pick it up.
Right.
You know, I mean, people destroy it, but we try to keep it.
Well, they want to enjoy it, but then they don't respect it, which is a total contradiction.
Right. So, but when I did this one, I've never painted a fish before. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to try something completely different than what I normally paint. And so I picked the Chinook. But I love the way the salmon look and how they change colors and go from the ocean to the river. You know, it's completely different than pretty much any other fish except for a shark.
Right.
But
I mean, they have their own personality, like all species. They really represent themselves. Nothing else is the same.
Right. And then trying to get upstream to spawn. I mean, it's completely different from going from when they're in the ocean, the color.
Right.
And then going upriver and completely turning red in different colors. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. I wanted to paint that where it went from one color to another in their change in the habitat, and it's pretty amazing.
So if you would, you know, because this is for our listeners, I think it would really help if you could just describe you know, what it is exactly that, you know, the scene that you've painted is.
The salmon going from the ocean, going up river to spawn. So it's actually changing habitats, and it's actually also changing colors. So, and they end up dying, you know, after they spawn. So it's kind of a bizarre life going from the ocean to the river and then spawning and then dying. So it's pretty cool. I had a lot of fun with this painting.
Did you interact with any other artists? I mean, did you guys do that? You guys kind of just go off in your cave and then just come back with the end result?
Yeah, I work a regular job, but I also, when I paint, I come home and go into my office, my studio, and then close the doors, and it's by myself. I don't really interact with anybody else when I'm painting.
And so now that you're here, I mean, what do you think about all these other pieces from your peers?
It's amazing. I mean, the concepts and the way that they paint, it's pretty amazing. I love it. I'm looking around and actually bought this one.
Oh, you bought this one?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I loved it. She loved it.
Yeah. That's rad.
But yeah, I love it. I love looking at other people's art and inspiring and, you know, doing things a little bit differently.
Do you see their personalities in these pieces?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you probably know, I don't know if you know all these people,
but
you can say, I know that one, that's this person.
Yes, I do. That's pretty, when you see, you start knowing the people and you can see their styles and their artwork, it's pretty cool. I like it.
Good. Hey man, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and I really appreciate you participating in this.
Awesome.
I think this is, I'm I didn't know what to expect, but I'm...
Yeah, look at us, we even bought one.
I know, I think that's great, you're supporting each other like that. You really need to, right?
It's a great piece, though. I was like, oh, that's perfect, it'll look good in our house. And it's great by an up-and-coming artist, yeah.
I'm a tattoo artist. I've been tattooing for almost 25 years.
I wouldn't have guessed.
So this, like painting something like this is completely different than what I would normally do.
It got you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, it was interesting because when they first asked him to paint this scenario and this wildlife adventure here, he was definitely like, whoa, because it was so out of the realm of what he normally does. But I have to say, this is one of his best pieces.
Really?
Like, it turned out phenomenal. And I mean, he's had rave reviews on it already. We've already sold some prints, just from the little bit of that we've put on Facebook, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's turned out really beautiful. Beautiful.
So, do you think you're going to produce more like this, like wildlife, and this style?
Yeah.
Now that he's been in this realm, he's been talking about that.
Honestly, I normally paint in oil. So, I do portraits and stuff like that. So this is a acrylic ink. So it's completely different than what I normally paint with. So
the way that he captured the light and is just phenomenal.
It completely pops.
I mean, I love the water.
This is completely opposite of what I normally do.
Well, now you can open up your own Etsy shop.
So yeah, it's been fun watching them. Right?
Well, you guys enjoy the rest of the time here. I appreciate it. Really, thank you.
Name's Lance Brown.
Okay. Nice to meet you, Lance Brown.
Yeah. I'm a full-time grocer, part-time artist.
Okay.
Grocery manager. But I was late to, the game. I kind of don't check my email as regularly as I should. And so it was past the deadline, and I was like, hey, Kelly, you still need anybody? And he was like, yeah, dude, next time you're down here, let's just look through the list and see what's left. So I was pretty much stuck with either plants, landscape stuff, or...
You don't sound too pleased with the plant concept.
Well, I was like, I don't know. That sounds like something my grandma... That's like something my grandma might paint, you know? She was always a landscape painter.
Gotcha.
And so... Noble was like, man, well, I was going to pick this, but then I got the bull trout, or Kelly. And so I was like, okay, well, let's look at what else we have, just to, try and rack it through my brain. And this was, the animal that really resonated with, something I could do. And, a lot of the art that I do is pun-based. I try to make light of situations sometimes.
Right. Life's just too serious.
Yeah, life's too serious sometimes. Yeah, so, a lot of people are like, your art appeals to kids. I was like, I don't know if that's a good thing, but I don't really have money. But anyway, so... Yeah, so I ended up taking the Fisher. And then for a couple weeks, I was reading about them and talking to people at work about them because, I was I don't know what I should do.
So you didn't know anything about a Fisher?
Not really. And they're in Boise.
Have you ever seen one, in real life?
Now that, after I talked to a guy at work, I was I think I might have seen one. And he was I've definitely seen one. We had
it sounds like a Sasquatch story.
No, okay. Yeah, I've definitely seen one. They exist. We were at a training out by the fairgrounds, and a couple guys were out there taking a little smoke break or whatever, and two guys were like, what the hell is that thing? He's like, dude, that's a Fisher. You never heard of a Fisher before? And they were like, no. I was kind of shocked that this dude who was covered in tats, he had Johnny Cupcake tattoo on his neck and stuff. And I was like, you know what a Fisher is? And I've never heard of this thing. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast. So yeah, he was kind of telling me, he's like, yeah, dude, I've seen him in Boise, and I think they live close to the river. And yeah. And then after getting stories from people, I was another kid had asked me to do a different Star Wars painting, and I was and Carrie Fisher had just passed away, so she's extinct now, and it just made sense, be careful, or you can...
She beat the Fisher.
Yeah.
Wow, that is...
So,
And I thought, like, Fisher, it was kind of hard to not do it, you know. Right, after, after that, like, came into my mind, I was like, yeah, this is what's, I have to do this.
So now that you set the scene, let's come over to the piece and then describe for our listeners what exactly you're referring to as far as this pun. Like, describe what a Fisher looks like and describe exactly what your interpretation was of that.
So Fisher is like a larger weasel rodent, and then Carrie Fisher, obviously Princess Leia. So I got Princess Leia in her standard position with her shooter, and switched out her face for the head of a Fisher, of a Pacific Fisher, with a nice, like, kind of based it off of like the most iconic photo of Princess Leia that I could find, and just switched it out.
It's the gun to the chest, and it's the Carrie Fisher typical buns on either side.
Oh yeah,
that somebody got in trouble with the Cinnabon thing.
Yeah, right.
So this experience for you, apart from, you know, you poked a little bit of humor, which I think is absolutely fantastic. If you've never, I mean, this is a new concept for you to be painting a sensitive species.
Yeah. Mostly I make up the species that I paint, like create creatures. Mm-hmm. Like when I was in college, I would get bored in lectures. I would get bored in lectures, and I would like have a soda can, and I would do a blind contour drawing of it, and then be like, "How can I make this a creature?" So I kind of did that, and then but I have kind of personified animals before. That's obviously not something that's like super new or original. There's a lot of people who do it, but. Yeah, I probably would have never done this had I not been invited to be a part of the show.
You did learn something from this.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, what is this, as far as, like, you know, I don't know where you stand in the world as far as knowing what species are in your backyard. Obviously, you're at this show right now, and you clearly are surrounded by all the species that are in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how this, the setting and the scene and being with your peers... How are you taking this all in? I mean, what is this mood and this vibe that's here amongst everybody? I mean, were people very eager to do this concept? And then now that we're standing here with these, you know, the pieces, the completed pieces, you know, what is the mood right now? Not only for yourself, but, you know, is this something that speaks to, I mean, are you seeing some of the reactions from the people that are coming to view?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of people are like, man, I like what you did there with the pun. That's the feedback I've heard so far. A lot of people.
But you would have to know what a real Pacific Fisher is.
Exactly, yeah. And I think people kind of looked at it and were like, and then they see like the tag and they read it like, oh, okay, I get it.
Right.
I think it's definitely eye-opening, like, I know that, you know, as time goes on, like, more and more humans have more of an impact on the environment and nature, and, you know, the more houses we build, the less houses the animals have.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's, like, how it moves in the future, you know, unless we're going to stand up and do something about it. But I think it's very eye-opening to, like, see all of this imagery of animals that are, you know, threatened, endangered, borderline extinct. And I think it's eye-opening just to see, like, what's in Idaho and how much we have to lose, you know? You lose, I can't remember the word they use for it, but like a primary species within that ecosystem and its overall effect on everything else. It's like how Einstein said, if the bees go, we go, sort of deal, you know? Like,
right.
They do most of the pollination of the food humans eat, and so it's like, you know, even that, just like, man, losing one species could have that much of an impact on the world around us.
Right.
So, cool. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Well, great, man.
So my name is Julia Green. I've been drawing and painting and stuff my whole life, and
I kind of decided, like, in high school that I really just wanted to pursue that. And so I decided I would go get my BFA in illustration. And so I went and did that, and I never wavered from it. Like, I was really set on going into that field. So it's been, yeah.
Straight and narrow.
No, yeah. So, yeah, I never wavered from it. I never changed my mind. It was like I just was dead set on it. And so, yeah, here I am. I mean, I do a lot of illustration work. I do some design work. Mm-hmm. I have a day job as a designer. But it still has some, like, illustration parts to it, so that's good.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, tell me what the process was. Like, how did you come up with your, getting involved with this type of show? Like, when you first heard about, like, mm-hmm. Swell wanted to make a show about conservation and the local species.
Yeah.
And their sensitive stage. You know, what was going through your mind when you first heard that? And, like, as far as, I don't know what that process is for you. When you're like, okay, this is my subject matter.
Yeah.
How am I going to digest, process, and, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So, I help run Swell. I'm not here during the day, but Kelly and Noble are the ones that really take on the art show themes and then kind of ask me what I think or just, like, decide to do those shows. I make a lot of animal work anyways, or animal themed artwork. And so when they told me about this, I was excited about it. I like doing art shows that benefit things that I appreciate, Idaho and wildlife.
Let me ask you this then. So if you've already had a strong focus on animals, mm-hmm. why is that? What is that personal interest or that attraction?
I've never, like, pinpointed that exactly.
You grew up with animals.
I grew up with animals, yes. I think especially in Idaho, I mean, who doesn't have pets here? I feel like Idaho, like, everyone has a pet or pets growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had dogs and cats, and I remember I had one of those little crabs.
Hermit
crabs. Yeah, when I was a kid, I had hermit crabs and hamsters and all those little animals that little kids always have growing up.
What about
up.
Anything else besides domestic creatures? How about, like, did you go, hi,
I wish.
These are all pets or
I
all?
Wish, I know, yeah. But I think that I've always wondered, like, if you look at my work, it's described as, like, cute or adorable.
Do you like those terms?
Oh, that's a bull.
I don't mind those terms. I think that's a very, like, easy way of describing my work. I know that I've always thought about, like, what does that mean? And I think it comes down to people are drawn to things that are vulnerable, and things that are cute have, like, this sense of meaning, like baby-like or infantile, and something you have to take care of, which I think could draw itself back to animals. Mm-hmm. Things that are, like, seen as, like, you have to help it. That could be, like, one way of people, I think, liking animals. I always think about that about my work. Like, why do I draw that way? Mm-hmm. And I haven't really unlocked why I do what I do. I'm drawn to drawing in a certain way, but I've had long discussions with my other artist friends, and I haven't unlocked that code
maybe
yet.
Maybe you're vulnerable, and yeah, you maybe want to be that's taken what. Care of.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, I don't know why I'm really drawn to that, but I have had long discussions about that. Like, things that are cute are seen as vulnerable, and people want to take care of it. And I would describe a lot of the things in the imagery in my artwork as that. Specifically my squirrels, like, they're the perfect size, the kind of my northern Idaho ground squirrels, they're, you know, they would fit in your hand, and I have them sleeping and burrowed together, so it's a very, like, soft touching moment, I guess is how I would describe that. Kelly kind of assigned that art, that animal, to me just because he knows that I like squirrels. And so I was just reading up on them, and that's how I decided how to draw them. I read that they hibernate for 8 to 9 months of the year, and it was something like they only mate for 2 hours out of the year. And I kind of thought that was, like, really funny and weird, and that, you know, they just burrow, and that their habitat's gone, and that's why we're losing them. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of just when I was just picturing these little ground squirrels sleeping all the time, and just being like, yeah, just hibernating. So that's kind of what my piece, what I wanted to do for my piece. But I always give kind of a more, like, whimsical take on it. So they have sleeping caps and they're under a blanket, which is not real life, obviously. But
I mean, you know, when I look at this, it feels very Christmassy.
Oh, I can see that.
It's got these nice, like, little foliage patterns on there, which are indicative of a wreath or something.
Yeah.
And then you've got the sugar cane.
Yeah, sheets. It is. Yeah, it does, you know, look a lot like
that.
And these
almost look like, these cheeks look like ornaments in my mind.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I mean, power of suggestion, it's all open to interpretation,
yeah, definitely,
blah, 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 blah.
Definitely, yeah.
But I mean, it felt very Christmassy to me, which of course is a warm season.
Yeah.
It is, you know, obviously not like the season itself, but the holiday portion of it. And that does contribute like a subliminal, like,
yeah, I could definitely see
feeling
that.
Of like, oh, okay, so they're cozy.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Christmas Eve. Okay,
yeah.
We could build a whole story behind it.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So when you were doing this, obviously you've had that emotional process that you would use in order to create this, because you've always drawn animals and squirrels in particular. But I'm wondering, you know, this particular piece, because it's representative of a bigger show and a message, how did that resonate with you internally, as far as like, okay, you know, this is more than you just drawing a bunch of cute squirrels. Like,
definitely,
these squirrels are not just any type of squirrel. They're not only regional, but they are at a sensitive stage as far as survival. You know, like, explain that type of connection. You know, like, did you connect differently with your subject matter than you have in the past?
Definitely. I think, one, like, the research. Like, I don't always go in depth and research on an animal. Like, I might see an animal that's cool looking, or a cat or something. I'm not going to necessarily research that cat the ninth degree. This, I did. Like, I looked up northern Idaho ground squirrel versus southern Idaho ground squirrel.
And what did you find?
They look the same. That was
the
funniest.
What about survival status?
They're both sensitive species.
Okay. And why is that?
Well, I think it comes down to habitat, right?
Okay. Like, so fire, habitat loss.
Yeah, habitat loss from fire and from
human encroachment.
Human encroachment. Yes, right. That's the proper term. Even though they both live in very different climates, I mean, northern Idaho is very different than southern Idaho. So the southern Idaho ground squirrel is much more deserted and those kinds of
Different environment.
Yeah, different environment. I kind of think too, though, that it probably doesn't help that they hibernate so much and only mate for like 2 hours out of the year. I was like, well, you're not helping yourself. That's kind of I was like, we'll start mating more squirrels, or something's gonna give. So, I do feel like with this, I definitely got a chance to research a specific species, and I think that's really interesting. I mean, there's so many different kinds of animals. You don't necessarily know all the different species and varieties of them. So I thought that this was great, because then you would learn specifically about, you know, a certain kind of fish or a snail. Like, Noble has a snail that I didn't even realize was, you know, a sensitive species. I didn't even realize that was...
Well, it's so small. I mean, you don't interact with it that often.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably step on it more often than you know, but...
Definitely. And I think, too, sometimes it's hard. People don't realize, even, like, locally, what animals in that state for them are endangered or sensitive. I think when people think of endangered species, they think of, like, you know, a certain kind of ape in some other country, or
more of these
lions.
Iconic charismatic creatures like elephants and giraffes, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And they and I think that that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is the whole mission of this exhibit, is to educate people about the animals that they obviously are not aware in their backyard, and the fact that they are just as threatened on many levels as some of these larger species.
Yeah.
They get the limelight.
Yeah.
But, so I think that I'm really glad you brought that up, because if the connection can start from the artist acknowledging that, conveying that through their artwork, and then the viewer picking up on that, that thread has now been connected.
Oh, definitely.
And then people then go, oh, okay, and using art with the variety of approaches that there's been is extremely important to reach the masses.
Yes.
So
I think that is a great, from an artist perspective and a viewer. I mean, Yeah, you wouldn't have thought of a specific species. I know that I didn't. Like, I really enjoyed reading about each one, and I think it was great that we had the little info card with each piece to kind of like give you information about each animal. Like, I didn't even when I was researching, I didn't know that it was like as few as 500 ground squirrels were in existence, which is, that's nothing. That's nothing. There's probably like 500 regular squirrels like in this city block. So it's definitely eye-opening, especially to see like how many might be in existence if you have like those numbers. So
I have just two more questions.
Oh yeah, definitely.
One of them is what reaction have you been able to pick up on from people that are coming in there to process, you know, like as you're seeing? Have you heard any comments about not just your piece, but even in general?
Oh, in general, I've been a little bit away from back here, at least, okay. for some of the artwork. I know that I've seen a lot of people reading the info cards and finding a lot of interest in
that.
Yeah, they definitely are doing both. They're like looking at the artwork and then they want to read about that specific animal. So I think that has been successful. I can't think of any comments specifically about the artwork other than just, you know, liking certain things about the work. Or connecting facts with like some of the stuff that's represented in it, but yeah.
Well, in the future, when you're producing pieces, especially because you're probably going to paint more squirrels in your
Yeah,
life,
yeah.
You know, is this give you a different perspective when you're painting? Is this going to make you? Is this like added a whole nother layer when you're doing it? Like, it's not just cute anymore. It's
yeah,
not just
definitely.
A comfort animal for you.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, well, okay, I'm essentially drawing.
Mm-hmm.
I learned something from this, and I'm essentially like, maybe all my squirrels are that. Maybe you were like meant to draw the squirrel.
Yeah.
You could be the spokesperson for the squirrel.
Yes.
You're going to be the crazy squirrel lady.
It definitely made me think like I should research, do more specific research to different species and really see like the differences between those animals. So like if I do want to draw a squirrel, instead of it just being like a generic squirrel, you know, research like, oh, where would, like, what kind of species would it be, or what do I want to focus on?
Right.
Because there are a lot of squirrels out there. If I want to stick with the squirrel,
that's right.
You know,
well, you have options.
Yes, I do have a lot of options. And I've never drawn a ground squirrel before, which is a lot different than like a tree squirrel or whatever, however they're called. They have like the shorter tail, like smaller ears. And
I would say that when I knew him.
Well,
I
think you should check out a Kaibab squirrel, the ones that they're like in the Southwest region.
Okay, yeah.
They are very animated looking.
Really?
You look at them and you couldn't believe, I mean, I find it hard to believe they exist like in North America. They're at this exotic, because they have these very long tufts.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them.
Really long tufts. Yeah. And then they have a white patch that really stands out. So when you see them jumping, it's like, what is that, a squirrel?
Yeah, like, what is that?
Because it has all these exaggerated features.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Yeah.
Let's just say, if you were talking to a bunch of school kids,
mm-hmm.
okay, and they were coming through, I mean, I would love to have kids come through here to look at this sort of stuff. You know, what would you hope that they would learn from that, or what would you say to them about, you know, art, you know, and conservation, wildlife, and just the hobby?
Yeah.
It's actually, okay, art and science are like brother and sister.
Oh, definitely. So, I mean, there's so much history behind that.
You know, because some of these kids will not be involved in either or.
Yeah.
Some might be more one or the other, but, you know, how would you speak to them coming from now that you've done something like this with a strong art background?
Yeah, yeah.
As far as, like, what they could do.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me, and I feel like it's been coming to a head in the last few months, is, like, figuring out whatever medium it is, either, you know, writing, or if you're artistic, or whatever your strong suit is, using your voice to like help donate your efforts to help something that might I can't even think of the word that I'm looking for to help something that might be in need. So you know, showing kids that, you know, yes, I did use my artwork to help bring light to endangered species. Or sometimes maybe there are people who write music or writers who want to write books about it. I think that that's kind of not even necessarily from an art standpoint, but just in general, like being a good steward of the earth or society, and trying to figure out like how your voice, whatever that is, like how you can use your voice to help those that need help. That's at least for me. I know that I've been trying to do more donation work and using my artwork to help other organizations however they can. Like, I donate work to the Humane Society. They use that artwork to promote their events coming up. I have other friends that make artwork and then sell it and then donate a proceed to an organization of their choice. I feel like for me that's probably like one thing I would stress to kids is like finding your voice to help those who need it.
Find something that you love to do and then utilize that effort to a cause that you know that is important to you and would benefit.
It feels good.
It really does.
You're growing yourself and you're helping grow that organization, whatever it is that you're helping.
It's a two-way road. You're nurturing each other. It's fueling the emotion inside you and you in turn are making positive change.
Yes, definitely.
Good.
I would tell them.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Talking with us.
Visiting the exhibit is Gregory Hughes, who is a biologist and state supervisor of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Idaho.
I work for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
And what is your position?
And I'm the Idaho State Supervisor.
Okay. And what's that responsibility exactly?
So I have three offices in the state of Idaho, one in Spokane, one in Chubbuck, and one in Boise. And we do Section 7 consultation, which is for all federal projects. We consult on endangered species and impacts. And then I have a Partners for Fish and Wildlife program that works with private landowners and others to work on restoration and habitat enhancement projects to try to protect the environment and be good stewards of the land. And I have a recovery and listing branch. If species are in trouble, we work on the listings of these endangered species or proposed, threatened, or endangered. And then I have a recovery branch that works on the recovery of these species, because our goal is not to list. We only list if necessary because they're threatened with extinction. But when they are, our goal then becomes to work towards their recovery and do everything in our power to try to recover that species, take them off the endangered species list, and they then are solely the state's responsibility to manage and maintain.
So how did you stumble across this art scene here that you're at right now?
My public affairs officer happened to see the little flyer that you guys put out.
Oh, right.
And,
with all the animals and the map.
With all the animals. I have it right here, and it was like, wow. And I looked at it, and I'm going, well, I've been in Boise for 6 months, and now it's my home, and Idaho is my home, and I care about it, and all the environment, right, and the people on the land, and the critters that that they support. So, and I happened to see, you know, who was there, the Land Trust, which is a big partner of ours. And then I saw the Endangered Species Print Project, and even though I'm in that field, I said, what is that? And I asked my public information officer, and he said, I don't know. I saw these, and I thought I would bring them and distribute them through the office. So
that's great.
And
so it worked. Our plan worked. We got you here.
Your evil plan worked, and I'm glad I came. And so that was one where, you know, we're a resource. Like you mentioned, Idaho Fish and Game is a resource. They're much larger. They've got many more offices through the state, and it's their primary jurisdiction and function to do that. But we're also here. We live in Idaho. We work in Idaho, and we love Idaho. So we're here also as a resource to provide technical assistance to whether it's private landowners or other federal agencies, or even working hand in hand with the state. You know, we're about collaboration.
Well, good. So now that you're here and you kind of see what's happening, what is your perception of like the scene here as far as like the art that you're seeing on the wall? I mean, you're obviously able to identify some of these species.
And
possibly you probably have some history in them. I mean, is there a piece in particular that stands out to you that you have a personal stake or a personal interest in?
Obviously, there's several of them. I mean, there's many of them here, but you know, Spalding's catchfly over here, I'm looking at that. As a matter of fact, that one spoke to me so hard. We just put in for some recovery funds for that species in Washington, in this case, and I have folks that have that Spokane office, so we're a little bit tied. And we know species don't know borders.
Right, right.
And so they put in for a project together with Washington and got funding to work on the Spalding Sketchfly project. So I was looking at that, and I'm trying to decide if I should buy that so that I could present it to the team that put that together, that worked on it, both federal and state.
I'm sure the artist would appreciate that.
I'm sure the artist would appreciate it, which then generates more art and more culture. Wolverine, obviously, they're looking at that now hard in terms of what we're going to do in terms of listing or not. I used to be the migratory bird chief for the Southwest region, so obviously the curbill thrasher, or the sage thrasher, what is that one there? Sage thrasher, and that one, Lewis woodpecker, all those birds speak to me, and my love of birds. And then there's a really cute, I mean adorable picture of North Idaho ground squirrels nestled in their bed in their underground labyrinth. And you know, from you and I discussing this, it was like you just gave these artists, you know, and some didn't know much about the species or its
exactly.
ecology or history, and they were able to then kind of do their own interpretation.
Right.
And it turned out really cool. And all of them, you know, it, as you said, it challenges, if you come from it as a ologist, pure biology, you know, either we have these perfectionists, right, that has to be in anatomical detail, or an abstractionist, and I'm more of an abstractionist, so I like it if it tells me something, and
right.
then I have to kind of interpret it myself as to what's it mean, what's it making me try to think about. And so
it's engaging at that point, right?
It's engaging captures, you know, there's some and it's individual, and I know that there's some that just kind of draw me in, and you have over here a pair of eagles, I can't remember, it's like tumbling to the sky or tumbling to the ground,
right? These guys right here,
since I know the biology of eagles, that's a courtship. And so they lock their talons and they come tumbling to the ground. And I think so that, as a particularly a raptor guy, that I'm interested in hawks and eagles and that stuff.
I actually love your commentary on some of these things, because I think a lot of people, they're not, you know, because you're coming from a strong science background, your interpretation is much different for you to digest this information. I mean, of course, a lot of this stuff is abstract in a sense.
Yep.
Those that don't have a background may just take it as art, but what's great, you know, the fact that we have these little info cards kind of gives them a little more insight. Like, oh, okay, now I can piece some of this together, you know, with some splashes of pop culture in there.
Exactly. So take the Spalding Sketchfly one. When I first saw it from a distance, it pulled me in, and I said, well, what? It has a shovel and farming and a tractor. And I thought, well, those are kind of threats. Why are those within the picture with Spalding Sketchfly? And then when you look at the placard underneath it, it speaks to those threats. So it's incorporating the threats right into the species that's there. And it's like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Right, right.
And it's a nice way to show it in a picture, or in this case, an artistic piece.
Well, a lot of words end up bleeding together and whatnot. And people, you know, they... Having a pictorial image with a message in there is just another way to convey that. I mean, and this doesn't necessarily mean that you're speaking to a child here. I mean, this is...
Absolutely not, but you could be fooled by it if it doesn't draw you in and you look at the details.
Well, it gets it definitely pay attention to detail and also gets your gears turning to actually process that, like think about what you're looking at, as opposed to just like, oh, that's just another image or...
Right. And then some are more, you know, some are subtle, some aren't. The steelhead with a steelhead.
Right.
To capture your imagination right away. I've been walking around looking at them, and I have to go back because something pops in my head. I go, I've got to go back and look at that. And see, what did I miss?
Right.
What's in there that I'm missing?
You know what that means? It means if you need to buy everything so you can look at these every day in your own living room.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are some gorgeous pieces here, and people have really done a fine job of interpreting what they think of the list of endangered species that you've given them to work with, and I think it's amazing.
Well, if you have the opportunity to talk to any of these artists, you should tell them just exactly that. I think they would really appreciate that.
I'll do that. Thank you.
So I'm David Roberts from Bitter Creek Ale House, and we are at the Swell Artist Collective. It's the Le Bois Film Festival, Idaho Endangered Species Art Showcase. I don't know if there's a succinct title or not.
No, it's probably like 8 acronyms is what it is.
Yeah, so I'm like, I think I got all the big themes, maybe. But Bitter Creek Ale House connected to the event just because we, so we've been open for 21 years, and in about 2010, our owner, Dave Crick, went to a food industry conference, and he was just like really struck by how much consumption was associated with the food industry, and it occurred to him that we could be a model for how restaurants could be less consumptive, just because like as human beings, like, you know, we consume stuff, and like one of the most like, you know, kind of specific ways that we consume stuff is like when we actually eat and drink things in a restaurant. We have the opportunity to make that process more efficient. And so when he came back, he started exploring ways to make us more efficient, and that included just like cultural changes, like, you know, helping the kitchen to understand ways that we could use less water and like how we de-thaw things, etc. We started trying to find food that was located closer to our restaurant, just because then there's like, you know, less energy associated with the way that it's
cut
processed.
Cut down our transportation costs, fuel, consumption.
Yeah, but then we also just felt like, you know, that we also like from a cultural standpoint of like representing the place where we come from, and by serving food that comes from the place where we come from, we're, you know, giving something to our guests that is like, you know, what we are about, and we like our city. So we also, in that same time, 2010, we started composting in our basement with worms. So we've got a big bin that has a bunch of, they're called red wigglers. They're like a specific type of composting worm, and they take all the organic compost from our prep kitchen. So just produce, no meat, no dairy, no animal protein products. Also no citrus and no onion skins or spicy peppers. And
the worms don't like spicy peppers?
No, they don't like spicy peppers or onions. They're okay with onions, not on skins.
Somebody told me that one worm is larger than the next. Is there like a golden like dragon worm down there that's in excess, that is like the mother of all worms?
No, but there is this worm that's native to the state of Idaho and northern Idaho called the Great Pelusa White Worm, and it's like 10 feet long, and they think it lives for like 20 years, and they're only discovered like 20 years ago. I'm speaking probably a little bit in hyperbole, but they're pretty gnarly. I would recommend people Googling Great Pelusa White Worm, native to Idaho.
Do you have one?
No, I think they only live in the wild because they burrow like way deep. Because it gets cold, and so to not get cold, they burrow very deep.
You know, they made a film about that.
Great Pelusa White Worms?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily that, but there was a movie that I watched on called The Lair of the White Worm. It was a very abstract, almost satanic type film.
Yeah.
About vampires. Anyways, you should check that out, man, because that might, you know, like
trigger something.
Feed the need or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyways, so tell me exactly how you became connected with this art scene here, because the way I see it is that it's not just refreshing to hear that type of approach for an organization, you know, like yours to do, but also beer is also art. It's also a craft. It's about adding ingredients and trying to tell a story, a flavor, right?
Yeah.
So how did you become involved with this the Swell concept?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we are super proud to be Boiseans, and we've been here for 20 years, and we try to do lots of things that help us promote. Like, I think the highest compliment you can pay to us as a restaurant, beer bar, is that you, when people come to visit you from outside of you are a proud Boisean, and when your family comes to visit, the first place you take them is Bitter Creek Ale House, because you feel like it represents, you know, Boise as a unique, distinct place that's culturally relevant, that's not Portland or Seattle. And I feel like a lot of times some Boiseans have a kind of like, you know, a little bit of an inferiority complex because we're in like a bigger city, but I want them to feel like they can be proud of certain aspects of it and Boise be part of that. So a way that we do that is by supporting things like, you know, local art, local music, local food, local beer, local wine, to the best of our ability. Now, that being said, we don't think that, like, by virtue of being local, something is also good. We try to pick the best of what's local, and I don't know if curate's the right word, but present, you know, the best of what's local in ways that, you know, give someone a sense of what Boise is compared to some other place. We don't want to be just a cookie cutter restaurant that just serves food that came out of a bag and, you know, presents art that was designed in a corporate headquarters sort of thing.
Okay. Well, my final question is, like, so what does it feel like to be in an environment like this, you know, representing who you represent, and then being immersed among, you know, a variety of artists that, know, kind of share. I mean, this the camaraderie, I guess, is what I'm shooting for. Like, what does that feel like to be part of a community, tight-knit community, in like a place like this type of setting?
Well, it's just exciting to see the support that the scene's getting. It's also exciting to see that people are, you know, super enthusiastic about supporting, you know, our natural resources. And I feel like that makes sense, because, again, to, like, beat a dead horse or whatever, I think that goes back to part of being, like, a unique, uniquely Boisean, is, like, we're very proud of our, you know, access to these, you know, wild places and scenic places and, you know, outdoor recreation. And so it's exciting to see these types of, like, collaborations happen between art movement and a brewery and a restaurant and, you know, a nonprofit.
Okay. Well, that's it, man.
Thank you so much.
We really had no idea how this exhibit was going to turn out, since everything was left up to the artist, but I can say that this organic approach conjured really dramatic results. We were blown away at the caliber of art, but even more amazing was the interpretation of each species by each artist. Some artists had never created wildlife art before, and after hearing about their experience was compelling to me and an awakening for the artist. You see, this is what it's all about. Connecting people to nature and drawing that thread and connecting all of us? You cannot create art from a book or a web page. We all inevitably have some sort of exposure to nature. The artistic expression comes from an intimate experience with nature, even if the moment was brief. There's nowhere else that that seed of nature can originate and the birth of creativity can pronounce itself. The other moments we witnessed was the support of a local business that adopts conservation approach to how they operate as a business that is mindful of preserving our planet by minimizing their footprint. It was also so refreshing to see the support of the local community and wildlife agencies, which solidifies unity. If we just witnessed artists and onlookers connecting to nature through this exhibit, then the mission of the Eisen Conservation Art Scene has fulfilled its goal. Creating content to deliver a conservation message can be expressed in so many ways. At Wildlands, we make videos and podcasts to engage people about our planet and all the biodiversity that live on it. There are so many brilliant and colorful artists out there that use their passion and talent to also communicate issues surrounding the survival of our natural world. We want to help create an environment where we all can come together and share our love for art and wildlife. If you are an artist or know of an artist, heck, you don't even have to be classified as an artist, just someone who shares our passion in helping create a community to share ideas and celebrate the arts and conservation. Please contact us. Let's inspire others together. All links and references will be on our show notes page. We have an open door policy at Wildlands, so we encourage you all to get involved. I'm your host, Sean Bogle, and I thank all of you and hope you enjoyed today's show. Stay tuned for future IACAs. Eisen Conservation Art Scene episodes. Ta-ta!
Those show notes can be found at wildlensinc.org/EOC112. That's wildlensinc.org/EOC112. The Eisen Conservation Podcast is a production of Wild Lens. Today's episode was produced by Sean Bogle and edited by Serena Simons. Our theme music is by The Humidors.